Chapter 23. Evening of the 32nd day, we got a shift of wind to the north. Night fell ominously. The sky was dark and threatening. The sea turned from gray to black. As we tumbled along uneasily, our way was lit by long, jagged streaks of lightning, each flash followed by a rolling thunderclap like cannon fire. The air was heavy and stirred sluggishly in the fitful breeze. The waves had lost their frenzy, but still rose high in powerful surges of slowly expanding force. In the weird twilight, the sky was an awesome spectacle, foreboding ill. I called it to the attention of the boys. There were several layers of clouds, and each layer seemed to be traveling in a different direction. This was beyond the experience of any of us, and we could not imagine what it portended. "Whatever it means," Tony said, speaking for us all, "it don't mean nothing good." In my 22 years in the Navy, I had never seen a sky or sea like this, and I didn't like the look of things a bit. "Better rest while you can," I advised the boys. "Any minute we'll have to bail." We lay down in the bottom of the raft. The spray that broke on us was cold, and we squeezed ourselves together to keep the warmth of our bodies. It rained often during the night, each time we got up to bail and wring out our clothes again. Tonight we talked more than usual, trying to cheer each other. We all realized, I think, that our spirits occasionally dropped near the danger point of lowness, and it became a game to see who could do the most to lift us out of our despondency. We made little jokes, forced and desperate. We didn't mind the bailing. Our hips and shoulders were so numb and sore from lying wedged in the bottom of the raft that we actually welcomed the opportunity to get up and move our stiffened muscles. We suffered from lack of circulation. We had so little flesh that our veins were drawn across our bones. When we sat up, our blood would move, but this exposed us to the wind and spray. We chilled easily so that after a moment we would be forced to lie down again in search of warmth. Thus we passed the night. It seemed a long time until daylight came. With morning, we saw that the sky was almost solidly overcast. We waited in vain for the sun to come out and warm us. Everything was gray except our yellow raft. Its giddy color on the muttering, gloomy sea accentuated its incongruity. The wind now had shifted to the northeast again and was driving us along at a lively clip. This was more to our desire, but we couldn't be sure where we were and couldn't have done anything about it if we had known. The only chart we had was in my head. About 11 o'clock in the morning, we hit a shower, heavy and cold as ice water. The raft held water over our ankles when it ended. We had lost the last of our rags in the last tip-over, so we took off all our clothes, mopped the bottom of the boat, and wrung over the side, repeating until the raft was dry. As we finished this tiresome chore, the sun appeared, for the first time that day. In our chilled condition, the rays felt good. "Let's take a sun bath before we put our clothes on," I suggested. The boys assented readily, and we lay against the sides to rest, for we were tired as well as cold. We stretched our clothes across the thwarts to dry. After a while, Tony spoke up nervously. "Don't you think we better put on our clothes?" I wasn't looking forward to it. They were damp. "Well, it's pretty rough, you know," Tony argued. "The boat's liable to go over on us again." The wind had risen and the waves were coming to a boil. The raft was bobbling like an orange rind. I hesitated for a few seconds and was just about to agree with Tony when a big comber caught us. We were lifted high, the raft on such a slant that we had to grab the sides and thwarts to keep from falling out. As we started to slide down the long, sheer trough of the wave, the breaking crest gave us an extra push upward on one side. The wind caught beneath the rounded air chamber. There was a wild scramble of arms and legs, mad grasping, and a confusion of shouts. "The clothes! The clothes!" I yelled frantically as I went through the air. The scornful wind snatched the words, and a great wave engulfed me. My head was out of the water again, and somehow my hand was on the raft. Jean, it appeared, had never let go and was hanging on desperately. Tony had fallen almost on us. I grabbed him by an arm. The waves were flinging us about, pulling at our legs as if with hands. The raft was upside down. Never letting go our handholds, we grouped ourselves together, and at an unspoken signal heaved the raft upward, trying to keep our grasp on the upended gunwale at the same time. A comber thundered down and almost tore it from our grip. Quickly, before the next wave came, we pushed upward again. The light raft went over this time, and I worked my way to the opposite side to hold it down while the boys climbed in. For a few minutes we rested, panting, each with an arm locked across a thwart in case we tipped again. The blood was pounding in my temples. I couldn't breathe without pain. My chest and torso ached, and, as I have explained before, I was perpetually half-numb from the hips down. With a supreme effort of will, I raised my head and rolled my body over so that I faced upward across the raft. The boys were lying still, heads down, twisted, inert, like dead men except for their loud and broken gasps for air. I noted automatically that our weight was not all on one side, which seemed to be our greatest peril. The raft was riding evenly, although it pitched and swerved in continual jerky motion, the bottom was holding to the water. So I sank my head upon my breast and rested. How long we lay this way, I don't remember. I know that we were not in full possession of our minds. When I myself began to think again, it frightened me to realize how easily I slipped away. I found myself as if awakened by a noise I half remembered from a dream. The boys were sitting up, revived, but not disposed to talk. I tried to straighten on my haunches, and then the situation struck me like a blow. All our clothes were lost, every thread and stitch, except, ridiculously, a police whistle that hung by a cord around my neck.